Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to Roland Garros, actual Roland Garros, because we're recording the show in two parts today. Part one, coming to you from the corner of Court Philippe Chatrier. We're at our usual Lavazza bar, although the Lavazza bar is actually closed. A man has just quite rudely refused to serve me three iced lattes, so I've had a very French experience trying to get drinks just now. But we press on valiantly without iced lattes. I know, get the violins out for us. And we're by and large having a lovely time out here. We're huddled around a little table. We've only got two chairs, which David and myself are occupying. And Matt is sort of hovering over us quite threateningly.
He's the youngest, isn't he? You know, so he's the one who can handle it.
I'm currently back to back with a French woman.
Sort of bum to bum with a lady that doesn't know she's participating in a podcast right now.
We'll keep you updated
on that situation, folks.
Okay.
As I say, two-parter for you today. We will wrap up the remaining matches in the second part later on. Coco Gauff is currently on court. Bianca Andreescu yet to start. Taylor Fritz on later as well. But we've had the main meat of the day as we come to you now. And the biggest story we've had today, very recently in fact, within the last half an hour, the loss of the number 8 seed Jannik Sinner at the hands of the world number 79 Daniel Altmaier of Germany in 5 hours and 25 minutes. It was the first moment of the tournament when the whole press room has been glued to one match on every single screen and one moment, which was Daniel Altmaier attempting to serve out this match. He had to have two bites at the cherry, didn't he? Sinner broke back the first time of asking, but then got immediately rebroken, Caroline Garcia style. And eventually, after a marathon game, Daniel Altmaier did get across the line. It was an extraordinary match.
It was incredible. 5 hours, 25 minutes, fifth longest match in Roland Garros history, I believe. And some of the shot making and the quality was absolutely off the charts, really. I mean, a great match for a backhand lover like me. We had one of the finest two-handers, Jannik Sinner. I think that's undisputed. And, you know, I knew about Daniel Altmaier's single-handed backhand, probably mostly from when he beat another Italian at Roland Garros. He beat Matteo Berrettini in the October French Open of 2020, and really has struggled to put results together on the tour since then. I mean, he's had a lot of success at challenger level. He's won four challenges on clay in the last year, and he's got an extremely dangerous game, and his backhand today was just firing. It was fantastic, that single-handed backhand. But, you know, it's one of those where I think we're going to have the why does Jannik Sinner lose all the close matches discussion, because that's now four slams in a row where he's lost in a fifth set. And such is the sort of fine margin, cruel nature of tennis, he was a whisker away from having this match wrapped up in four sets, because he had a match point in the fourth set. He probably should have put away the smash, but he didn't. And Altmaier hit a forehand and it clipped the net cord and went over Sinner's racket, who was at the net just there ready to put the volley away. And it's such fine moments, but Altmaier, what a talent. And he's so physically strong as well. He does a lot of his training in Argentina in the off season. He was the stronger, better player in that fifth set, and
looked like he could have gone on longer.
Totally. He got a little tight towards the end. Yeah.
There was some Dominic Thiem-esque forehands, weren't there?
And there was some dropping it short, and then but then suddenly he played this incredible moon ball to save a break back point that Sinner had. And he was a worthy winner. He was awesome today.
Yeah, it is an absolutely beautiful backhand. I know we're all seduced by the single hander. It was a question on one of our listener question shows that we do for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. I think the one we recorded shortly after the Australian Open, you know, do we overvalue single-handed backhands because of their aesthetics? And I think unilaterally the answer was yes, we do sort of unashamedly overvalue single-handed backhands. But this one is both beautiful and monstrous. It really is. So explosive. And where has Daniel Altmaier been? He's 24. He turned pro 9 years ago. A career high ranking of 53. So he's been higher than where he is now, but never inside the world's top 50. I think there are some explanations for where he's been. I think timing-wise, the pandemic really hit him. He was just coming into his stride, I think, in 2020. He's had a litany of shoulder and hip problems, but I think he's clearly also just a late bloomer, as those very physical players often tend to be. I hope this is the sign of Daniel Altmaier being a consistent fixture nearish the top of the game, because he's electrifying.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who went to Courtsers and Longlin today who will depart being Daniel Altmaier fans after that, because that was so spellbinding, what he was able to do with the tennis ball, able to stand toe-to-toe with an incredibly powerful opponent like Sinner, who's much more celebrated and much more, in theory, experienced at the top level. But, you know, Altmaier took it. That's the difference. Sinner was... He has fallen short too many times at this level, and I do think it's a problem now, because, you know, this is an early stage of a tournament like this. In a half of the draw, when Daniel Medvedev has gone, for him not to take advantage of that is a big blow, I think.
Yeah, I think just one final point on Altmaier is...
Oh, no, I've got more Altmaier material, Matt. Stand by for that.
Well, apparently he puts quite a lot of pressure on himself. You know, like he keeps kind of expecting it or wanting it to happen, and that can kind of affect him, I think, in those tour matches, where if he's ranked, say, between, I don't know, 70 and 100 in the world, he's running into tough players quite early on. And how many times do we say, where's that player been? Why aren't they higher ranked? It is a reminder, I think, that there are so many good players ranked in that region of the rankings. And sometimes you need a break to be able to get out of that position in the rankings and propel yourself up and almost just skip a few levels.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just so hard to sort of break out of that category, because...
Yeah, there are sort of ranking bands.
The talent depth is so
big.
There?
If he could just get himself seeded at slams, you feel like that would provide a springboard to get into the next band. But you're right, it's sort of the wilderness of the depth of the sport, I suppose, that he's in at that ranking. As promised, just last little tidbits of Daniel Altmaier info, because clearly I've been on his bio on the ATP website, and I can tell you that he loves fishing. He fishes mostly for trout at home in Germany with his dad. But he dreams of being able to fish for tuna in Mexico or the USA.
Oh, I love it when they...
Which I feel like is a dream that he can very easily make come true.
Yeah, easier than getting himself seated at a slam, I would have yeah. thought.
I love it when they come up with something that is really an unknown for people like me who maybe just come into the court, watching him play for the first time, and now knowing that little fact about him. I mean, the other day when Constant Lestien was playing, I wish I'd known before the match that he's actually a magician who...
A literal magician, yeah, not a tennis
yeah,
magician.
Who goes to weddings and children's parties and does his magic tricks.
Those people are annoying, though. People that do magic, like, on the side. Don't you think those people are really annoying?
Well,
people that you're at a dinner table and someone produces a pack of cards and says, do you want to see a magic trick?
There's a lot of people I would probably say yes to about that. But having seen Lestien play the sport, it wouldn't feel right if he wasn't a magician on the side to me.
Hannah, who does our Twitter, is going to be so pleased because another podcast has gone by and David's found a way to mention Constant Lestien.
He's going further in the Grand Slam than he ever has before.
Lots more to talk about. This already happened today, mostly in the women's draw. Before we move on to that, I'll remind you that the tennis podcast throughout Roland Garros is brought to you in association with On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. On Location is the official tour operator for the BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells in March. And we can tell you that their packages for that via Steve Fergal's international tennis tours are now on sale, which means that you can have a tennis podcast-esque experience in tennis paradise. And I cannot think of anything better. You too can drive a golf buggy around for 2 hours and come home and decide you're going to be semi-professional at golf.
And hire the world's biggest car and just sort of drive around the place and watch the most incredible tennis matches in really close-up seats and have that incredible mountain backdrop. I mean, and it's in March. What a beautiful time of year to be in Indian Wells, in the desert.
You can look forward to it all winter.
Yeah.
It can be the little carrot at the end of the bleak, bleak winter to get you through. If you would like to go to Indian Wells in style and experience one of the most spectacular settings to watch professional tennis, staying in a 4- or 5-star hotel or accommodation, great tickets to watch the tennis and access to a hospitality suite that may or may not have shuffleboard in it and a place to relax in between matches, just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast and go to the Welcome to Paradise section, which I can only imagine is a great section. Just incidentally, I did promise we'd move on to the women's draw, which we will momentarily, but Sinner plays Grigor Dimitrov now, who...
Altmaier.
we're so used to the thought of it, and I've been banging on about how he's going to go all the way.
Grigor Dimitrov now, which Matt's on board your train, David. He said, oh, he's playing bloody well, Dimitrov.
Well, I went even further than that. I was looking at the draw and said, there's a route through for Grigor Dimitrov to make the semis here.
And Altmaier.
It's when there's a route through that
it all goes wrong.
Drives himself into a brick wall.
Do you actually think, sitting here right now, having seen Altmaier's backhand and knowing that it's going to go up against Dimitrov's game, do you think that Dimitrov's the favourite for that match? Would you make him favourite?
I think Altmaier just played 5.5 hours on an incredibly hot day. And he's a fit guy, as we've just said. But I think there could well be some hangover from that.
Yeah.
The whole thing about backing up a big win, I think, is always a question mark for a player hoping to do that.
He didn't back up the Berrettini win, did he? Mm.
So, to be honest, that whole bottom quarter is a huge opportunity for everyone. I think very, very hard to pick who will reach the semis out of that section. You know, I think most people would have said Sinner or Medvedev, and we're on, what, day 5? And they're both gone.
Yeah, there's a focus about Dimitrov which has been there throughout the last few months, I think. And, okay, he hasn't had sort of show-stopping wins that make you really stop in your tracks, but he's been winning ones that he should win quite comfortably, actually. And I don't know, I think he could be dangerous, do some damage.
You're just always keeping an eye on Grigor Dimitrov's results.
It's 11 years, Catherine, that relationship you and I have had with Grigor Dimitrov that he knows nothing about here on the Tennis Podcast.
Moving on to a new hype train, that of 16-year-old Mira Andreeva, who's through to the third round here, beating Diane Parry 6-1, 6-2, a potential meeting with Coco Gauff next. Gauff is currently 6-2 up on Yulia Grabha on court Suzanne Longlin. I would expect her to go on and finish that match, although we'll let you know if that happens in part two. She's proper, Mira Andreeva. She plays tennis far beyond her years. We were all watching this one together and just remarking upon, usually when a precocious kid emerges on the scene and does something spectacular, you're remarking upon how spectacular it is. And actually, I think what is most remarkable about her and what she's doing is that she's just so solid. She looks like she's within herself in all respects, and just comfortable, and like she's been doing this for donkey's years. And
it's
actually
she's tennis.
Just turned 16.
Everything about her is matter of fact, actually. She doesn't seem to get overwhelmed by any of it. Playing the points, arriving onto the scene. I mean, she was playing on the Simone Mathieu court, and she described it pretty much as not that big.
Yeah, she said, she was asked, that was your first match on a big court, how was it? And she went, oh, it wasn't that big.
of many killer lines from her press conference.
Yeah,
generally,
she
didn't seem at all impressed by any of us. Not that she should be impressed, but she wasn't fazed at all. I mean, it just seemed like an interesting experiment in her life.
No, she was attentive to the media, wasn't she? She was very patient and seemed a little bit bemused by it all. But, also wasn't remotely fazed by the room full of media. It was a lovely press conference because the WTA moderator, I think, realised that this was the getting-to-know-you moment for her and let it go on a little bit longer than would be normal. And it was lovely. And actually, at one point, she was asked, could you describe yourself, please? Which, as an adult, I would really struggle with. I mean, my heart is pounding just at the thought of that question. I couldn't believe how well she dealt with that. And she remains obsessed with Ons Jabeur to the extent that she is utterly convinced that her game is just like Ons Jabeur's. Now, it's a great game. It is nothing like Ons Jabeur's game.
How would you describe Mira Andreeva's game? Everybody who listens to this will know how Ons Jabeur plays. How would you describe Andreeva's?
Well, I guess what I would say about Ons Jabeur is that she makes extraordinary things look quite ordinary because she's got all the shots in the book and she can repeat them. Whereas what I would say about Andreeva is that she does the ordinary things of tennis extraordinarily well. Like, it's, to me, it's kind of the total opposite of Ons Jabeur.
Yeah.
There's a clean technique, an ease of stroke production, minimal of fuss about the way she goes about her tennis.
She's not reinventing the wheel with her game. This isn't something we haven't seen before. I'm really into her. I think she's a great personality. You know, it's always exciting when a young talent emerges on the scene. I love her completely undaunted attitude to the stage and to whoever her opponent is. But the game, I don't think, is something to necessarily coo over. She just does everything so well and makes you feel secure watching her.
Yeah, I think she hits angles quite well, which maybe is a little comparison to Ons Jabeur. I've thrown her a bone. I've got my eye on her backhand, of course, because that is the rock solid shot. I think the forehand she likes to dictate with, but it can maybe drop a little short sometimes. The backhand is great, but the whole thing is just, well, there's a real confidence about her when she talks and when she plays. She's only dropped 6 games in 2 matches here, and she's qualified as well. She's been beating people easily. Like, it's not like she's scraping through these matches. And she said, I think the first thing she said in her press conference was, Well, it's not like I didn't expect it. Like, for a 16-year-old... OK, she's playing Diane Parry, who, you know, is not a huge name, is probably someone she did genuinely think she could beat. But just that confidence for her to say that, I thought was... I thought kind of said it all about her, really.
My favourite moment was when she was asked about the challenge of being a 16-year-old playing grown-up tennis in one of the biggest tournaments in the world. What are the biggest challenges? And she said her coach tells her, don't be diva. and she was very she was very aware of the potential of being a diva in these surroundings, I think. And she said, and let's be honest, it's not kind of the gist is, let's be honest, it's not like I've done anything yet. And I'm thinking, you've just qualified for a Grand Slam age 16, and you've just beaten Alison Risk, Cameron Trash, and Diane Parry, barely losing games.
Well, I suppose when you set your bar at trying to win 25 slams, as she said, yep, then qualifying and reaching round two probably is nothing.
She was asked to specify what her goals were, and she went, well, Djokovic has got 22, might get 23, so I guess 25? Sure. Yeah, I mean, she's got time.
She does it. She says all of these things with a little twinkle in her eye as well.
Oh, so good.
And I'm trying to read, well, where is she coming from? But I do think she's amused by the process, and she's playing with us a little bit. It's playful.
It did make me think of the press conference we went to of Bianca Andreescu the other night, and the conversation we ended up having off the back of that, which is, how do you rediscover what Mia Andreeva's got right now, which is that the fearlessness of youth and the thoughtlessness of youth, you know, everything just happening and you're experiencing it and being swept along by the wave. Once you've lost that, it's impossible to rediscover.
Right, so how does Andreeva keep that?
Exactly.
As well, yeah, there's a sort of dreamlike quality to kind of everything she says and just how she is. Other great lines I thought were, I have to do my school, but let's be honest, I don't do it sometimes. She was asked for her first Roland Garros memory and came up with something from last year.
That was Catherine who asked that question, wasn't it?
I mean, I knew it was going to be something recent because she's literally just turned 16. I was bracing myself to feel incredibly old, but wasn't expecting it to be 2022.
And it was about having seen Djokovic singing backstage, which was a lovely little tidbit, wasn't
and,
it?
And said that she didn't expect Andy Murray to be so nice.
Yeah.
Because he's maybe not like that on court.
He was so great.
Oh, she's the best.
Yeah, and I love the idea of her playing Coco Gauff. Obviously, since I made an unsolicited prediction about Coco Gauff, she's going to break down in the second set, so let's see. But the idea of Coco Gauff playing somebody 5 years, no, four, three years younger than her.
Yeah, it's unusual.
Three, maybe four?
It is unusual. I remember that happening to her not that long ago, but it's unusual. Yeah, I mean, I think it shows how these players come along. And I mean, when Coco Gauff first played on Wimbledon centre court and beat Venus Williams, I don't remember anybody, us included, talking about her forehand as a point of conversation. Nobody had spotted that there might be an issue there at all. All it was just excitement and freshness. And now, here we are, talking about another player with that sort of excitement and freshness, and it's not going to be like that forever. So, you know, we've all got to kind of enjoy her, how she comes across now at 16. She's got to enjoy the process age 16, because it does change.
Sorry, momentarily distracted because the most gargantuan cheese board has just rocked up to my right, and I smelt it before I saw it.
Yes,
and it's
still, you're still into cheese boards, aren't
good,
you?
Good God, that looks amazing. Okay, I'm going to actually shift my
She's
body.
Turning
so
her back on
so
the
it's
cheese
not
board.
In my eye line. Right then, Elena Rybakina marched on in the first match of the day on Court Suzanne Lenglen earlier on. I think, look, it was a nice matchup for her today. I think she really enjoyed Linda Noskova's ball, and they're very similar players, and Rybakina's just better than Noskova. So it doesn't surprise me that the scoreline to this was quite one-sided in Rybakina's favour, but she looks so comfortable to me. I think the hot and lively conditions are suiting her really well. Her movement looks really good to me. She just... Look, we'll only find out when she's properly tested, but she looks good.
Yeah, she probably gave the most, I don't want to say negative, but most sort of slightly critical review of her own performance. Like, she thought it was a tough match. She thought that maybe her game wasn't that great. And I was like, well, if that was your game not being in top shape and that was that being a tough match, then... look out everyone else, because I thought she was really good today. As you say, a favourable matchup. Noskova does similar things to Rybakina, but Rybakina does them a lot better and has a much bigger serve. And it's such an efficient way of playing on clay that Rybakina's got. Like, she can just end points in a way that so many players just can't. She's not wasting any energy out there when she's playing well, you know, and I think she's in a really, really good place for Rybakina.
And on a collision course with Ons Jabeur, which is...
Wow,
I'm on a countdown for that.
Repeat of the Wimbledon final.
Yeah.
I've loved watching Rybakina the last few months, quite honestly. I don't think I've seen her at all where she's looked as though she's flustered, that she's... in any way doubting her ability. She looks comfortable on every surface. She looks comfortable on every big stage. And she clearly expects herself to produce a level every time. And it feels so repeatable. She's not even having to... She doesn't throw her body into the ball in a wild way. She doesn't stress body parts in a way that some other players do who may hit the ball as hard as she does. It's quite formidable to watch.
That's it. If she's having bad moments, they're not coming at bad times. You know, she's playing, I think, the big points really well, and that's proof of what David's saying, I think, this confidence about her.
Yeah, she, as I say, on a collision course with Ons Jabeur, a very easy winner today against Océane Dodin, again, similar to Rybakina, just a great matchup for Jabeur. Dodin is not a great mover around the court, and Jabeur just... sliced her up and toyed with her. It was a lovely sort of platform for Jabeur exhibition tennis, really, from what I saw of it. And
nice, isn't it, to see Jabeur playing confidently, seemingly fully fit, and without the weight of expectation on her shoulder, because we're all talking about this big three. You know, she reached two Grand Slam finals last year, and we're not talking about her. She came into this tournament as one of the favourites, and last year. It's very interesting.
And we've decided that the world number one trophy is what she has as her lock screen on her phone. We've decided that's what the non-Grand Slam trophy is. So, yeah, big four, big schmore. Although she's not saying it publicly because we know how that's gone for Barbora. Big three, big schme, rather. You know how that's gone for Barbora. Krejcikova will be saying it's a big five. I know I've lost every match for the last 6 months, but it's a big five. Who would you pick in Jabeur Rybakina right now?
I'd have to go Rybakina. I'd be going for Rybakina against everybody in the draw except Świątek. And even that is on a knife edge, really, at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm desperate to see Rybakina, Świątek. I'd love to see Świątek, Jabeur. Unfortunately, not all of these matches can happen because they're all in the same half of the draw, because Świątek played today, she won today, exactly the same scoreline as round one, 6-4, 6-love, a sort of slightly tighter opening set than everybody might have been expecting against Claire Liu, but then... once she grew comfortable and loose, it was one-way traffic. She wrote, "I'm feeling 22 on the camera, because of course she's a Swiftie, and this is her first match, her first victory as a 22-year-old.
Just if you needed her to be more likeable.
Well, it was a very Taylor Swift themed press conference, and none of the Taylor Swift related questions came from me or Matt.
Wow, that's big.
What self-restraint.
Indeed. Well, she got herself a bit flustered when she was asked what era she's in at the moment. She really didn't She didn't want to get that one wrong, which, you know, is obviously a sign of great respect to the Eras Tour and the body of work that Taylor Swift is gifted to the world. She was like, oh, come back to me. I'm really going to have to think about this one. I don't want to get it wrong. And then she said, I'm definitely not in my Reputation era. Can't see that coming.
What era are
and
you
And I thought,
in?
Well, Taylor Swift never thought she'd be in a Reputation era either. But there she was.
Life comes at you fast, there you go.
Do you have an era, you two? Or?
Oh. I suddenly feel like a Yugoslavia under pressure.
Folklore era.
Okay. I don't really know what we're talking about at the moment, so I'm sure you do, listener.
I feel like I'm probably always in a folklore era.
I've got my hair in a plait today, so it has to be a folklore era.
Okay. All right. I'll
find sort of more broadly, not just today. I don't switch eras every day.
You can explain what you mean to me a bit later.
Wang Jinyu for Iga Świątek next.
Yeah, I mean, what do we think about Iga Świątek? Like, the fact that she's having these matches, 6-4, 6-love, is so counter to what Iga Świątek usually does, in that she usually comes out fast. You know, that's been her thing. Brilliant first sets, kind of putting the match beyond doubt within the first few games of it, and just giving you this confidence that she's just playing brilliantly and going to run away with a match. That's certainly been the pattern of so many of her big wins over her career. But I feel like by reading too much into 6-4, 6-love, what I'm purely doing is judging Iga Świątek against herself. And
that's a good point.
Like, she's still winning in straight sets. I don't know, I just feel like the game's a little bit untidy at the moment. I don't think her serve is working as well as she would like.
Rebecca is playing better than she is at the moment, isn't she?
I would say so.
I would agree with that. She's looking stressed in the early stages.
Right, and maybe that's fine. There's room for improvement. Maybe she's on a more similar, well, a more normal sort of trajectory for a Grand Slam champion. Like, it's not normal to win all your matches.
No.
6-love, 6-1, 6-love, 6-2, as we've sort of got used to her doing.
She's been doing that and then hitting a brick wall of somebody else,
right,
hasn't she? After nailing all... I mean, but just imagine if we ended up with Świątek and Rybakina and Alcaraz and Djokovic in the semis. That'd do, wouldn't it?
It would indeed do. I know we've been focusing on the women's draw, but I just wanted to go back to the men's briefly and pick up on a really interesting result, a win for Francis Tiafoe in four sets, coming from a set and I think a breakdown as well to Aslan Karatsev. A match that we all kind of wanted to get more eyes on, despite having six eyes between us, we didn't have many eyes to divert to that because there was all sorts happening in the moment, but Mary Carrillo was out there watching the whole thing, and we have a review from Mary. Well, actually, she alerted us early doors that exciting things were happening out on Simon Mathieu, because she said major agricultural event happening versus Tiafoe, and that was reference to the fact that Aslan Karatsev, who is hugely agricultural, I would say, was bettering Tiafoe big time.
What's agricultural again? What's our official definition? Well,
I think it's your word, isn't it,
yes,
David?
It's somebody with a hefty chest who could just sort of pick up anything and heave it about.
Would be comfortable with a hoe.
Yes.
we'll finesse that. Okay. Tiafoe, anyway, came back to win. So we asked Mary for an assessment of how that happened, because she was watching right from the first ball, and she said, first set Karatsev was a master farmer ploughing long, deep rows of winners. Crops were good. Second set, third, Tiafoe's game sprouted, and Aslan's lines came up a bit barren. Thank you, Mary, for taking all things agricultural and turning them into something poetic. I think that's massive for Francis Tiafoe. I remember interviewing him on the eve of Queens last year for Amazon Prime and asking him how it felt to have the grass beneath his feet again. He loves to play on grass, doesn't he? And he said, every day of the clay court season, I wake up and think, is it grass yet? You know, he in his head... he can't do clay, I don't think, and maybe this has convinced him that he can a little bit.
I think he has no limits on himself now at all. And actually, I think what he was saying there about every day I wake up and think of the grass beneath my feet is a really, although it's funny and it was said with humour in mind, I think that's a real negative. That, because I think, you know, that's what was in the back of his mind somewhere, is that I'm not going to do anything on this. And now I don't think any of that's in his head. I think he feels he can go toe-to-toe with anybody. To go toe-to-toe with Aslan Karatsev and basically knock him off the court, or at least do it better than the opponent, the same kind of game. They're both trying to do the same thing, absolutely smash the ball. You know, it's immense, really. And I think he wouldn't have done that 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I think it's big.
Yeah.
He's got a chance of going deep here.
Yeah, I mean, that bottom half of the men's draw is a land of milk and honey for whoever player is prepared to, or players that are prepared to grab it by the horns, because, yeah, as we said a couple of days ago, Daniil Medvedev has caused absolute mayhem down there by winning
Rome. Just as he likes it.
Just as he likes it, yeah. So that is your part one. Coco Gauff has not only got the break back, but sealed an extra break, so she's 6-2, 4-2. So I feel confident that I haven't laid an egg in part one that I'm going to have to clean up in part two, which is quite the relief. We'll be back with you later. Well, as you're listening to it, it'll be mere moments. For us, it'll be later. And we'll wrap up the full day's play.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Well, via the miracle of time and podcast editing software, we are back. The day's matches have been completed. It is now 5:05 the next day, and we're back at Tennis Podcast Towers. And while Daniil Medvedev lost, crashed out of this tournament 2 days ago, the spirit of him lives on and has found a new host in the form of Taylor Fritz, who has given us the gift of week one of this French Open. Who knows, possibly the whole tournament, but I really feel like I've been given a very special gift by Taylor Fritz tonight, and I can't stop smiling about it, David.
Me neither. And if you didn't get a chance to see it, he was up against Arthur Rinderknecht, who was the sole remaining French player left in the singles for men or women of France. And it was a cracking atmosphere on Court Susan Longlen, packed crowd. Rinderknecht took the first set, Fritz came back at him. And then in the fourth set, the crowd decided they were going to give everything. They were going to drop everything into this match that they possibly had got left. Rinderknecht was whipping them up into a frenzy even more. And Fritz was just having to stomach this. And quietly so. I mean, he didn't make a peep. All fourth set. It was a really good performance from him. He did get his serve broken, and the place went bananas, which was fantastic. And then he broke again and held to win. But on the moment of victory, the second of victory,
he suddenly started to run around the court, shushing the crowd. As extravagantly as I think I've ever seen. It was a bit like Medvedev when Medvedev's doing that furious shushing of individuals.
Oh, he shouted to the crowd. He had his index finger to his mouth, and he shouted to the crowd, "Let me hear you." Then it was absolutely incredible.
And of course, he hurt them. Because they did not like this. They kind of loved it and they hated it in equal measure. And they gave it back to him. And he just did it more and more and more. And he wouldn't stop. And then the realization came that he's actually going to have to do an on-court interview with Marion Bartoli in front of the same people who are just hating him. And he's hating them. And they didn't stop making all that din. And he could not hear what Marion Bartoli was saying to him because they're still kind of socially distancing when they do those interviews. And so he ended up having to call her over to say it in his ear. And he only gave one answer.
Answer... Only one line was required.
Yeah, that answer was, you know, when I had such an incredible crowd cheering so loudly throughout the match for me, I had to go and win.
And then he walked off.
Full Medvedev.
Yeah.
He basically said, I won because of you.
Oh,
thanks, guys.
It's back. when you go to sleep tonight.
That's what they'll be doing right now. They'll be going to sleep thinking of that Taylor Fritz.
Just didn't think Taylor Fritz was that guy. That's what makes it all the more brilliant. He's had like a personality change because of that crowd. He's something has snapped within him and he's just thought, enough of this. I am taking you on.
Netflix effect?
Could be.
I believe he's being filmed again this year. I don't know.
I mean, it felt fairly in the moment, didn't it? I don't think it's this is going to look good on Netflix.
Exactly, but just
generally, he's showing off his personality maybe a little more than he would a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it was just really...
Why has he been hiding this personality? This is fantastic.
The only downside is Catherine's going to now watch his next 600 matches hoping for a reprisal of this moment. It's never going to come.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like Medvedev... Because when Medvedev did it at the US Open, I don't think we knew that Medvedev was that guy then. Nope. I think we didn't really know Medvedev quite as well as we know Fritz now. Medvedev was newer on the scene.
Yeah.
And Medvedev, other than a very brief period where he became corporate Medvedev and had his, you know, had lots of photo shoots taken. We didn't like that Medvedev.
You're talking about the polo neck
with
the tennis balls.
Yeah. It was a low point.
And the side parting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, he has embraced being the villain. Do we think Fritz is going to keep that up? I'm not sure. I mean, I think he's going to be the villain as long as he's left in the tournament.
France specific.
Mm. Yeah.
It felt very like, you know, noughties, Americo-French tensions, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, when America renamed the French fry. Remember that?
No.
They stopped calling it a French fry.
Did
or
they?
Like McDonald's or somebody.
They just call them fries.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Does that ring a bell?
I know that they do it. So there must have been a moment that they started doing it. So that does make sense. Okay. But I mean...
It wasn't quite as well-researched as other history that I've reported on. I'm worried I've got that wrong.
French fries relived. But I do feel like the matches that he plays subsequently are going to be very interesting to see whether the crowd that attends those remembers this.
And Francisco Cerúndolo is never going to have had so much support.
He's the man.
I had a little sad moment just now realizing that was it for French crowd support like that at this French Open, because all of the French players have crashed out by the end of the second round.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons it was so severe, the crowd support, and so intoxicating, because I think they knew that this is it. This is our last chance.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily anyway. Because, you know, I'm sure they like Artur Rinderknecht, but...
Honestly, they make you feel like he has no limits. Yeah. The way they... I do not think that French crowd differentiates between whether it's Caroline Garcia or Yannick Noah in 1983 or Jean-Jean or Artur Rinderknecht. They just go for their own and they go full-heartedly, no matter what. It's amazing.
David, while you were commentating this evening and presumably having an excellent time, you missed Matt's rendition of La Marseillaise. Full verse and chorus.
Did I? Where did that take place?
Right where you find him now. It is on our Instagram.
Okay. I look forward to that, along with the crowd.
Yeah, because they...
It's probably the last one this tournament.
Yeah. I mean, the events of the match have become so irrelevant in my mind because of what happened afterwards with Fritz shushing them. I can't remember when they sang the Marseillaise, but there was a point where they were singing the Marseillaise.
They'll get big into the doubles, though, this crowd still, won't they? Because they'll take anything they can get.
Is Teddy Fritz playing doubles?
That'd be good.
Too late for him to enter?
Their whole reason to be will be, let's attend Taylor Fritz matches and give him
I'm so gutted hell. He can't play another Frenchman.
Yeah.
But
for all credits,
I really just hope he leans into it from this point on, the way Medvedev did, and it became his thing, that tournament. And
it won't. That's it. You've had your fill. Unless somebody else
metronomic winning of titles, David. Is that what you're predicting?
If somebody else gets in his kitchen, we now know he's prepared to go to war, you know, and just throw down.
I implore all of the ATP Tour to get in Taylor Fritz's kitchen for the good of all of us. Get in that kitchen. Start scrambling some eggs, people. Taylor Fritz through to face Francisco Cerúndolo. As Matt said, we now know who Francis Tiafoe's third round opponent will be. That will be Alexander Zverev. He won in straight sets on Philippe Chatrier tonight. Matt and I went out to court 14 to watch Bianca Andreescu, and we didn't get to watch all that much of Bianca Andreescu because she won quite comfortably. There was just a little moment of drama where she went a breakdown in the second set, and that moment occurred while Matt and I were were journeying to court 14, which is quite far away from the media centre.
Court, I haven't been to that.
Lovely.
All right.
It's I don't think there's any ticketed seating, but it's
fourth court, isn't it?
Yes. Right. Yeah, and it's sunken amphitheatre style. It's one of the new ones that opened. Well, when did that part of the site open? 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
2019, maybe?
Yeah. Beyond Suzanne Longlen. And it's the biggest of the courts sort of in that part of the grounds. Yeah, absolutely lovely atmosphere, fantastic. But yeah, the one moment of Bianca Andreescu jeopardy occurred while Matt and I were bustling through the crowds around Longlen.
But that meant that we arrived for the surge.
Oh yes,
which, you know, is the greatest part of any Bianca Andreescu tennis match, I think. And yeah, I mean, we feel like we're maybe powering her through this draw. I mean, we're arriving for some surges. Round one, round two. She now plays Lesia Cyrenko in round three, which is a little bit tricky, I would say, but I've just got eyes on round four, where it would be Iga Świątek, probably. Goodness. And I'm getting carried away and excited about that match, which I know is a foolish thing to do, but I can't help it.
We've been there before, haven't we? We were there. That happened.
We were there
in
at
Australia.
The very last Grand Slam.
Yes,
and Christina Buxer happened.
Yeah, that's right. And she was epic that day, and then she was absolutely miserable against Świątek the next round.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm previewing a match that hasn't been set up yet, but I'm going to. This is on clay, and obviously that is a huge advantage for Świątek. But I think Andreescu's in a much better position than she was in Australia. I think she's I think she's playing better.
I saw them play against each other in Rome a couple of years ago.
Had a very good first set.
Yeah, really close. So I would love to see them play each other on clay. Brilliant.
Dare to dream. Coco Andreescu was pictured. Matt and I were desperately looking around the court. We couldn't find the players' boxes. They weren't visible from where we were sitting. Well, certainly we weren't able to pick them out. But
we deduced that they simply had to be in the section of the stadium that we couldn't see, because we'd look so closely at everyone that we could see, and they weren't Team Andreescu.
Picking Coco Andreescu out of a crowd of thousands is one of my special skills, and we were unable to tonight on Court 14. But Hannah, with the benefit of TV coverage, was able to take a snap of Coco Andreescu, well, Team Andreescu, and poor little Coco was in a cone of shame.
What's one of those?
Well, a cone around the neck, you know, that dogs wear.
Oh, to stop them, like, scratching themselves or something.
It can be that. It can be. They usually put in one after they've had a surgery of some kind to prevent them from getting at the wound. It can be all sorts of things, David, both serious and not. But you can imagine it was a cause for alarm. And Matt and I were unable to attend the Bianca Andreescu press conference, but I've worked some sources.
Okay.
Ooh.
Your Coco sources.
I got sources, folks.
This is hot off the press, because I asked you about 20 minutes ago whether you'd heard from your source and you hadn't.
I have now. She has allergies.
Oh.
These are forwarded WhatsApp messages that come direct from source. She has allergies. She keeps licking her paws, so basically we want to stop that. Nothing serious, 2 exclamation marks. There was a later WhatsApp. Was it that woman that chatted to me about dogs in Stuttgart? Lol. That was asking about Coco.
Was that you?
It was me.
Were you in Stuttgart?
No, but I interviewed her while she was in Stuttgart. We was on Zoom, I was very much asking about the dog.
That woman.
That woman who asks about dogs.
Yeah, she's got me nailed.
Okay. Oh, I do. Yeah. I'm liking
you really understand each other.
Yeah.
Look, it's been a night of hard-hitting journalism. What can I say? Matt did do, just to redress the balance, Matt did do some hard-hitting journalism in Yannick Sinner's press conference, which hadn't happened at the time that we recorded part one. As soon as we wrapped up recording, we then went to Yannick Sinner's press conference, and Matt asked him very directly, sensitively, but very directly, about losing all the close matches. And I don't know.
Did you give him a number?
It wasn't a brilliantly reassuring answer, I don't think.
Well, the problem is, David, I didn't get the impression that he was asking himself that question. Why am I losing all the close matches?
I mean, how serious is it? If we look at the close match, how many right. are we talking that he's lost?
Right, so his exits from the last 4 slams, you know, a whole cycle of slams now, have all been in a 5th set.
Oh, right.
Now, of course, in the press conference, I had to sort of group them together with the benefit of being able to be a bit more nuanced and expand on the podcast. Of course, they're not all the same. You know, one was a 5th set loss to Novak Djokovic on grass. I don't think that was a bad loss for Jannik Sinner. He had match point against Carlos Alcaraz at the US Open. It was one of the best matches we've ever seen. But I think the two this year against Tsitsipas in Australia, he only really started playing in the 3rd set there, and then he really faded in the 5th. And today, as we said in the first part of this podcast, Daniel Altmaier was awesome. His tennis was fantastic. But also, you know, he's ranked where he is for a reason. And Jannik Sinner should really be beating Daniel Altmaier. So there is a theme, there is a connection, I think, between all those losses. Deep in the 5th set, and he's not able to close them out. And he just sort of said, well, I've won some close matches. And I wanted to say, yeah, but not the really important ones. And he just sort of talked about how that's tennis. It'll come. And
there you go. I said that all those years ago.
And on the one hand, that's probably, you know, quite a healthy way to process things. I don't want Jannik Sinner to be, you know, suffering and whatever. But at the same time, I really want him to make good on his potential. I want him to overcome this obstacle that he's going through. And he just didn't give me a lot of faith, really, that he's got that different gear. That's the thing with Sinner. I think he's so obsessed with the process that he's on. And I, you know, sportsmen and women and athletes always talk about that. And
process, not
perfection. Process, not outcome. Process, yeah. Not perfection. I totally get that that's a thing that they have to do. But at the same time, he said that his goal for the year was to reach Turin. And I sort of thought, okay, yeah, you weren't in Turin last year. That would suggest some progress. But at the same time, I thought, you're better than that. Yeah, you're better than eight in the world. Well, you should be. Your game, he's gone absolutely toe-to-toe with Carlos Alcaraz. I almost think he needs to be... Mm. He needs to be at Bianca Andreescu thinking, time might be... It's not running out.
That's
but,
your par, not your goal.
Right.
Holger Rune's should goal, be a bit of a goal rush. For the season is to win a Grand Slam.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. That's your... It'll be a terrible season if I don't get that. But have a goal that's more than that.
Right. I want a bit more oomph.
The very best players elevate when it's tight.
Right.
They find something from
Look
somewhere.
Look at Djokovic in tie breaks.
Yeah. Mm. He is awesome most of the time when it really matters. You know, he faffs around sometimes. And even remember Todd Martin saying all those years ago that when he worked with him, and I mean, you know, you're talking 16 years ago, he said he used to rest on his laurels. And then he stopped resting on his laurels in the important moments in all these big Grand Slam matches. And you see it. He faffs around sometimes not winning matches because he's got time. And then when the time shrinks, the real Djokovic turns up. And Sinner, you're right. I mean, he played a flat level. And Altmaier had too many peaks above that level.
Yeah. And I think when you've got a game like Sinner's, which is... brilliant, of course. He doesn't have a lot of variety. And I think what happened today is he almost played Altmaier into form, it felt like. Because, you know, Sinner's rally ball is so good.
It's a nice ball.
It's a nice ball to hit. And I almost think maybe Rublev has this issue as well. Mm. They're playing great tennis. But they also bring out the best of their opponent in a way. And I think Altmaier just... grew into that match, grew into it, and Sinner didn't change it up, didn't have a way to throw Altmaier off. And by the end, Altmaier was just absolutely in the zone, just playing the most brilliant tennis that he can, and kind of just had too much for Sinner. It's a definite thing for Sinner that he keeps losing these big matches in the biggest tournaments.
Even if he doesn't think it is. We know better, Jannik. So that's pretty much a wrap on today. Tomorrow, this is the schedule. Chatrier starts with Mertens against Pegula. And then Rakimova against Sabalenka. Very much a flavour of let's get the women out of the way tomorrow. Because then it's Djokovic against Davidovic-Fokina. And in the night session, you'll be surprised to hear that it is a sausage fest. Carlos Alcaraz against Denis Shapovalov, which I've got no issue with that being a night session match. It's a brilliant match. And if you'd prioritised equality before this, you could have, you know, scheduled that in the night session without it being a 5-0 scheduling inequality. Mm. But here we are.
And there seems to be a point being made by a lot of people at the moment about the night sessions that, well, the women don't want to play there anyway.
And I don't think anybody really wants to play there.
Right. And I was just going to say, that is totally not the point that we are making. You know, the tournament said everything about what the night session is last year, when we know for a fact that Rafael Nadal, at the time a 13-time French Open champion, now a 14-time French Open champion, wanted to play Novak Djokovic in the day. He was definitely requesting day session. He said in his press conference, I do not want to play at night. They put that match at night. That match, for them, is the match of the day, the high-profile match, the match they consider the best, the most interesting, the most attractive, probably, to use Amélie Mauresmo's own word. So it's about the message that they're sending with these matches. Yes, the women might be, you know, getting the schedule that they want, but the message the tournament is sending is that every day the men's match is the match of the day. And it's so wrong, and I'm so, so sick of it.
Yeah, rooms lunch every day. The schedule coming through really does. Peyton Stearns and Daria Kazatkina open up. Longlen, Rublev, Sonego, Stevens, Putin, Saver. That's my ring fence match of the day. I'm looking forward to that. Schwartzman, Tsitsipas last on there. Hashanov, Kokkinakis opens up. Simon Mathieu, Blinkova, Svitolina, Musetti, Nori, and Mukova, Begu. That is Simon Mathieu tomorrow.
It's going to be a good day.
I think that is a good day. That's a really good schedule as we get into our first third round matches. We have lovely Phoebe, our mascot. We have our own mascots, Maisie, Xenia, Darwin.
All right, Maisie. Donna Vekic let us down. Sorry, Donna. I bet you did.
Look, there's just no accounting for tennis players.
Well done, Bernardo.
That's how
Pera.
I feel about predictions.
Nicholas Jarry, though.
That's so into Nicholas Jarry.
Did he win?
Can't stop talking about him. We have Billie Jean King. Who sponsors Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss sponsor Billie Jean. We had a lovely Brazilian fan talk to us earlier on Court 14 and actually gave us some guidance on our pronunciation of a recently high-profile Brazilian player whose name I'm not going to say because I need to refer back to the voice note that he that he gave me. But he also showed me a picture of his dog and it made me really miss Billie Jean.
Ah.
But she does not miss me. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And Matt, we have shout outs.
We have Julian Wookie from Toronto.
Toronto.
Like Julian Boutet, the French player who once played Roger Federer in Federer's first ever ATP final.
Wow.
There you go.
And like Julien Beneteau, who once had a go at Federer about getting preferential treatment.
Oh, yeah.
That was good, wasn't it?
More of that.
Thank you both for coming up with Julien so that I didn't have to recycle my very, very tired Toronto stories. Thank you, Julien.
Yeah, cheers, Julien.
We've also got Chelsea Giller from Boston.
All right, Chelsea.
Hello, Chelsea.
We're all thinking of the mid-table Premier League club, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
I went to see Chelsea play a few weeks ago. They were shocking.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not great, were they?
Absolutely but shocking.
Chelsea, so the friend great. Of the tennis podcast, is amazing.
Mm.
Yeah. Where was Chelsea from?
From Boston.
Oh, yes. I've been to Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Had a lovely holiday there with my dad when I was about 13, 14.
I'd love to go and see the Boston Celtics play basketball one day. Something I'd love to do. You a fan, Chelsea? Just checking.
Thank you, Chelsea.
And finally, we've got Susan Ramsey, who is in Falkirk.
All right, Susan.
In Scotland.
Hello, Susan. We had a Susan recently and I came up with Sue Barker, didn't I? And it's just not good enough for Susans. It's
the best that we're going to do, I think.
Sue.
Well, Susan has a little story that could
helps.
That could help us fill some time while we
cheers, Susan.
Try to think of other Susans. She says, it's my third year of being a shout-out friend of the pod. I walked a virtual version of the North Coast last year with me doing actual walking, but an app showing me doing that route. I listened to the pod all the way. This year, I'm doing a virtual Land's End to John O'Groats.
Listening to the pod?
That's 1,083 miles, so I need plenty of long pods to get me there.
Well, we've got 1,105 episodes in our archive.
Is she on a treadmill then? What's virtual about it?
She's not on the North Coast.
The location is virtual.
Yes, but it's the distance. Right, Fitbit app tells me that I've earned the India badge for walking the length of India over a very great period of time. But I've not ever been to India.
Right. We're all doing virtual walking every day.
Every day.
Right. Thank you, Susan, ever so much.
Yeah.
Good luck with your virtual walking. Sounds like you're doing great with it. Thank you, Susan. Thank you to all of our friends, our shout-out friends, our intro friends, our predictions friends. You all are making it possible for us to be here at Tennis Podcast Towers covering this tennis and witnessing Taylor Fritz be an absolute hero. We have love today, folks. We'll be back again tomorrow and we'll speak to you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.